catches our attention, and we wonder, what is meant by this? And Solomon explains this throughout the rest of the book. As this statement is explained throughout the book, we come to understand that the author has in mind life focused on what is under the sun. We see that in verse 3. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Under the sun, that's important. When one does not look up to the one who rules over the sun, but lives apart from him, life is utterly empty and vain. And that is what's being referred to as toiling under the sun, or living under the sun. It's without one's gaze set on the Lord. It is a secular life, a godless life, living just for the things of this world that are under the sun. I say, when one does not look up to the one who rules over the sun, but lives apart from him, life is utterly vain, empty and vain. God is not mentioned at all in the opening section. The godless life is in view. Now, we also saw last time that the purpose of the book is to show us the absolute vanity of life without God, so that we finally stop expecting earthly things to give us lasting satisfaction, and we learn to live for God rather than for ourselves. And as we worked our way through the first 11 verses of the chapter, we saw Solomon give us evidence that all is utter vanity. His evidence was this: man gains nothing by all his toil under the sun. This passage countered materialism, that drive to accumulate and find security or satisfaction in material wealth and possessions. The message was that anything you do that is not done for the Lord will gain you nothing. Now, this evening in our passage, we will be told where to find enjoyment. But first, Solomon speaks further regarding the places where enjoyment is not found. And there's a typo on that sentence. You can cross out that word wisdom, speaks further regarding the places where wisdom is not found. Change that word wisdom to enjoyment. Solomon speaks further regarding the places where enjoyment is not found. First of all, he says, find enjoyment not in knowledge of the world. Look beginning at verse 12. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me, and my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation. And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So he's talking about how he personally tested the pursuit of the knowledge of the world. We saw that in verse 13. I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. He sought to know everything there is to know about this world. Now, think of the various quests that we go on for knowledge of the world. We may go to school to learn about this world. We may listen to the news to find out more about what is going on in this world. We may read literature. We may watch television. We may read things on the internet to find more about this world and what is going on in this world. We travel to see different parts of the world and learn more about the world. Many different ways that we seek knowledge about the world. Now, what this book tells us is such quests in and of themselves are a striving after wind. He says that in verse 17. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, meaning not that he wanted to follow in the way of madness and folly, but he wanted to understand what is madness, what is folly. I perceived that this also is but a striving after wind. Another way to say it is vain. It is empty. There's no substance to it. There will be no fruit from doing so. The emptiness of this quest for knowledge about the world. It does not satisfy. It brings no joy. It leaves one empty. Now, he uses different proverbs to communicate the vanity of this and why it is vain. If you look at verse 15, he says, "What is crooked cannot be made straight." Now, compare that to what he will say in chapter 7, verse 13, as all these themes run throughout the whole book. Chapter 7, verse 13, "Consider the work of God, who can make straight what he has made crooked." When Solomon sought to know everything there is to know about this world, he found out that the world is quite crooked. He ran into evidence of the curse that God has placed on this world at the time of our fall into sin. The world is crooked. It is broken. It is fractured. There is pain. There is suffering. There are tears. There are natural disasters. And then you have the wickedness of man in addition to the curse. It is a crooked world. And so he says, what is crooked cannot be made straight. We cannot undo the curse that is upon this world. He also says in verse 15, and what is lacking cannot be counted. Because of the curse, there is a lot lacking in this world. There's a lot to be desired in this world. And that is what you come up with. That's what you find when you seek to know everything there is to know about the world. So he says in verse 18, "For in much wisdom is much vexation." The Hebrew word translated vexation means can mean irritation or anger or provocation. If you truly come to understand the condition of this world, it angers you. It irritates you. Because things are not the way that God created them in Eden. This is a cursed world with tragedy, brokenness. Why does the tornado take people on one side of the street, but not on the other side of the street? Why do babies starve to death in famines? This is a crooked world, and there's a lot lacking. And so in much wisdom is much vexation. And he goes on in verse 18 and says, "And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." What we see in the world brings us sorrow. And therefore, he says, this quest to know about the world is an empty quest. You think, this is going to be great. It's going to enlighten me. It's going to be satisfying. But no. When done in and of itself, no. It is empty. It is vain. That's not where true joy is found. Now he goes on in chapter 2 and tells us, find enjoyment not in the pleasures of the world. We started with not in the knowledge of the world, now not in the pleasures of the world. Look at chapter 2, verse 1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom. Meaning, he didn't give himself up to drunkenness. He retained his cognitive ability. but he did cheer his body with wine. Verse, he goes on, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasures of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the children of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So he sought all the pleasures of the world and came up absolutely empty. No better off than when he started this quest for pleasure. No satisfaction, no joy, no improvement, just emptiness. Now think of how prone we are to join the world in the world's chase after these types of pleasures. The world chases after the pleasure of humor, after the pleasure of wine and other substances, after the pleasure of building houses and gardens, after the pleasure of food, after the pleasure of having servants and other conveniences, chasing after the pleasure of money, the pleasure of music, the pleasure of sex. All those were mentioned in what he mentioned. And all of this, when done under the sun, leaves you empty. The same conclusion as in the previous section, verse 11. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity, and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So here in verse 11, we have the answer to the question that was asked back in chapter 1, verse 3. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? The answer now is nothing. He gains nothing from all this toil done under the sun. Now we go on in verses 12 through 17. As Solomon tells us, find enjoyment not in the benefits of wisdom over folly. Look at verse 12. Let me just get a drink. So I turn to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. He's saying he has searched out everything and done everything. So the king who follows him will not be able to do anything that Solomon didn't do. Verse 13. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. So wisdom definitely is more beneficial than folly. Verse 14. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Great benefit of wisdom. It gives you sight. And yet I perceive that the same event happens to all of them. That is, both to the wise and to the foolish. That same event, of course, is death. The wise die, and the foolish die. Makes no difference if they're wise or foolish. They still die. Verse 15. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So not only do the wise and the foolish have the same end in this world, physical death, but going on beyond their death, there's still no difference. The fool is not remembered, and neither is the wise one. All right? Several generations from now, no matter if you're wise or foolish, no one's going to be remembering you. Yes, Bernard. He's speaking in general terms. Certainly there are some exceptions. But certainly we who are reading this, certainly applies to us. Dorian. Even with these few people that we remember from the scriptures, like Solomon, the majority of the people in the world don't remember them.
But there's still a lot more people who remember Solomon than the guy picking the grapes in his court.
Right, right.
So there is somewhat of a distinction.
But there's also fools who have gone down in history. So it really doesn't make the difference that there's the wisdom. Ivers. The virtuous, those who really set a good example, are not the people that the world seeks to remember. So as we continue on there, verse 16, for of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come, all will have been forgotten, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and striving after wind. Keeps coming at the same conclusion. He takes different approaches to finding meaning, fulfillment under the sun in a secular way. It always comes up empty. We go on to verses 18 and 23, where we're told, find enjoyment not in acquiring possessions. Verse 18, I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be a master of all for which I toiled, and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. Then what happens after you complete your collection of possessions here? You die and they are passed on to someone and you are not in control of who they go to or what they do with them. And they may just as well end up in the hands of a fool as compared to a wise person. And that is exactly what happened with Solomon's stuff. Got passed on to his son Rehoboam, was absolutely foolish after he came to power, and so he forfeited 10/12 of his father's kingdom. If Solomon knew that was coming, that would have just reinforced his point here. But he already knew that it was the case. He says, in verse 20, so I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. So you toil for all these toys, all this wealth, and you don't end up with it. The one who toiled for it, the one who worked for it, does not end up with it. Instead, it ends up in the hand of someone who did not work for it. So that acquiring of that possession, that building of that wealth, is absolutely vain and empty. Verse 22. And when he says that this is a great evil, I don't think he's saying this is a moral evil. He is saying this is a terrible thing. Because that word evil in the Old Testament can be used with other meanings other than moral evil. He's saying this is a travesty. Verse 22. What has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. He says, what happens when you accumulate a lot of stuff? He says it leads to sorrow. Sorrow, because you're worrying about your stuff. You're worrying about keeping your stuff. You're worrying about what's going to happen to your stuff later on. And so your work is a vexation. It's an irritation. It's just a cause of anxiety. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. Cannot have a sound night of sleep because his mind is on his stuff that he cannot ultimately keep. So he says this quest to acquire possessions is vain and empty. Now, all of this is setting up for the point of the section, which comes in verses 24 to 26. He tells us where to find enjoyment. He's warned us against looking for enjoyment in all the wrong places, so that now he can tell us where to find enjoyment. He says, find enjoyment in God's daily gifts. Look at verse 24. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and striving after wind. So after so many verses that were giving us the secular point of view, life lived under the sun without a view to God, now he directs our focus to God. Now, verse 24 is going to be repeated again and again. Remember what verse 24 says. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. He's going to repeat this again and again until it climaxes in chapter 11, verse 9. Let's look forward to where he's going with this. Chapter 11, verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. He says, rejoice with an eye to God, with a fear of God, knowing that God evaluates everything you are doing. So while seeking to live according to the law and the will of God, rejoice. That's where he's going. Now come back to 2:24. 2:24, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. Now he's, in these verses, commending to us some of the very activities that he just rejected earlier in this section. He's commending to us eating and drinking and finding enjoyment in our toil. But he had just rejected those things as vain. What makes the difference between what he was saying before and what comes here? What makes all the difference is God. Before it was doing all of these things without an eye to God. Now, what he is saying is, rejoice in the gifts that God is giving you each day. He gives you food each day. Eat that food with joy in the Lord. He gives you drink each day. Drink that drink with joy in the Lord, recognizing it as a gift from Him. Every day there's toil for you to do. Now this toil is from the hand of God. It's a gift from God. It's not meant to be an end in itself. No, it's a gift from God. It's not to be idolized. It's a gift from God to direct our attention to God. And we are to be thankful to Him for this toil that He has given us to do and rejoice in Him. So it's all about a change in perspective, a change of heart, a change of mind. Now, it might be a little confusing in verse 26 when you contrast the one who pleases God with the sinner. We have to understand what he's talking about. When he's talking about the one who pleases God, he's talking about the one who's under the favor of a gracious God. And here when he's talking about the sinner, he's talking about the one who's lost in their sins. So let's reread verse 26. For to the one who pleases Him, that is under the one who's under the gracious favor of God, for to the one who pleases Him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. You see, joy does not come from the creation. Joy comes from the Creator. To the one who pleases Him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, the one who's lost in sins, He has given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and striving after wind. The wicked, the unrepentant, those who are not recipients of the gracious favor of God, they are the ones who are going to, in the whole scheme of things, end up empty. And every good thing they had is going to end up in the hands of the redeemed. Now, I want us to zero in verse 24 on what he says when he talks about finding enjoyment in our toil. Many people today hate their work instead of thanking God for their work. They postpone enjoyment to a time in the future that will never truly come. They are working so hard now and are miserable at it as they are preparing for a time later on when they will get to enjoy the fruit of all their labors that they are having such a wearisome time with right now. But if right now you have not been given by God the ability to enjoy what He's given you now, how are you going to ever later on enjoy what God gives you? We think that we will have, when we are not joyful, we think that we will have joy if our life situation just changes. If I just find a spouse, if I just find a better job, if I can just move to a better state, then I will have the happy, joyful life I'm looking for. But this warns us, you will never find joy by changing your life situation. If you can't be happy and content with the Lord and joyful now with what the Lord has given you, you won't be joyful in another situation. Joy comes when the heart and mind are changed to take our eyes off of what's under the sun and place them on the one who rules over the sun. And to recognize all the gifts that He has given to me and to enjoy them right now, today, as gifts from Him. To thank Him for them. The New Testament is going to expand upon this idea. Look over at Colossians chapter 3, verse 16. The creation was never meant to satisfy us. Only the Creator can satisfy. Look at Colossians chapter 3, verse 16. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. Everything is to be done in the name of the Lord Jesus, with thanks given to God the Father through Him. When you thank the Lord for your food at the table, it's so easy for that just to be something rote. We don't even think about it. There's no gratefulness in our heart. It's just words that come out of our mouth. This is teaching us, don't fall into that trap. Sincerely thank the Lord for your food. It is a gift from Him. When you wake up in the morning and think about the different responsibilities that you will have in the day, don't think, oh, woe is me. I have all this hard toil to do. It is hard. It is toilsome. Because there are thorns and thistles, there is a curse upon this world. It's not going to be all pleasant. Work is hard. We have to sweat. But while there is hardship, while there is pain, while there is sweat, at the same time, if our eyes have been set on the Lord, we can give thanks to the Lord and be grateful for the hard toil and find enjoyment in doing our work unto the Lord Jesus. One more passage. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. He's speaking here in the previous verses about how there's difference of opinions within the church over what we should eat, what we should drink. Here's the conclusion of the matter in verse 31. So whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. That's what Solomon is teaching us. Don't think that something is so small that it cannot be done to the glory of God. Everything that we do, no matter how small, is to be done with an eye to God for His glory. All of it. And that's the only way that we will ever find true joy, true contentment, true satisfaction. Anything less than that will leave us empty.